America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We are live. Welcome in, everybody. This is Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio alongside Chris Algieri. No, that is not Chris Algieri. We called in the ringer. We called in the Hall of Famer, the GOAT, the greatest boxing broadcaster in the history of time. I'm talking about Jim Lampley.
Thank you, Dan. I am honored to be a fill-in here for Chris Algieri. I know that he can probably still make welterweight 147. I can make junior middleweight 154. I'm pretty sure of that today. So I'm a logical enough stand-in for Chris, and I appreciate the opportunity.
I think I can make 168 or 175, which is why we are here in Las Vegas for an unbelievable fight in the light heavyweight division, David Benavidez versus David Morrell, who is directly behind us right now on camera, off camera. We just talked to him in a private room for some content that's going to be coming out on our socials. Morrell is looking trim. He is looking ready. Would you say so, Jim?
He looks sensational. And he looks exactly like what you would expect from a guy with a disciplined Cuban amateur background, a style that is both technical and powerful. He has a lot of assets to bring to the ring. Absolutely, he looks as though Ronnie Shields has supervised a terrific training camp and has him in great shape for the fight. And he's, I don't want to say working overtime, but seems to be very interested in getting under Benavidez's skin.
That's right.
And going back and forth at Benavidez with a lot of animosity. And I don't know whether that's going to serve his interest in the fight or not, but he certainly seems to want both a verbal and a physical confrontation.
I think Benavidez is we also talked to him too. He is amped up. He is very ready to go. I don't know if he's going to fight like that in the ring. And he does is a fighter that throws punches and bunches, 60, 70 punches around. He is very visibly tuned up. And I don't really like to look at a fighter's demeanor and think that they're going to fight like that in the ring. But if he chooses to stand and trade and stand and bang, Morrell is a very sharp counterpuncher, and he is a very lethal puncher. I would say Morrell has the power advantage, one punch power advantage over Benavidez. I'm very curious to see if Benavidez enters the ring, how he's entered these press conferences, how he's entered all of these media obligations. Very aggressive. He comes in aggressive. Morrell could pick him apart. But Morrell, I feel like with his laughter, he's laughing a lot on stage. Some of it looking at it as nervous laughter. I think, you know, he's never been on a spotlight this big. Benavidez has fought Caleb Plant. That was a very big fight. He's been in some bigger fights, been a champion since age 21. There's a lot of storylines in this fight, and we're going to get to all of them on this episode. Obviously, Chris Algieri could not make it to Las Vegas. He had some travel issues. Sucks. But we wish Chris well. He'll be on a show with us tomorrow. Had a call in the substitution, Mr. Jim Lampley. Everyone, we're going to get some questions from the fans. We're getting a lot of people that are very happy that you're here. The legend, Jim Lampley, we're not worthy.
Think of that.
Great to see Jim. Someone needs to give him a job calling fights. Best play-by-play guy of my lifetime.
Nobody has done that, and which is interesting to me.
In terms of you calling a fight, right?
I can actually live comfortably and happily the rest of my life without calling any more fights. But when HBO went away after December 8, 2018, I thought that someone would want me to call fights for one of these streamers or other networks involved in boxing. And other than a couple of one-offs which made offers, I have not bumped into that further continuation of my career yet. And given my age and the number of years that I've already put into calling fights, there's every reason to expect that will never happen again. But I'm not going to be covert enough to pretend that it doesn't disappoint me. It does. I loved calling fights.
You were great at it. My childhood, everyone's childhood, or everyone's adulthood, everyone's boxing fandom. Well, you were involved in it. You were in their living rooms. You, Larry, Max Kellerman, who I spoke with a few weeks ago. It was nice to hear from Max.
All good things do come to an end.
You're
How's
right.
Max doing?
He sounded great. He said you might be hearing from me soon. You might be seeing me on your televisions. So I'm interested in all that. Send us questions. This is a Jim Lampley Q&A section. At the end, we will get the best questions. So you can ask Jim whatever you want. But let's talk about this main event. Let's talk about why we're here in Las Vegas. Let's also talk about PPV.com. Order the fight on PPV.com. Join us in the live interactive chat. Me, Jim, Lance Pugmire, Chris Algieri. That is a dream team. That is a 1992 Barcelona dream team. When it comes to live chat interactions, those of you that have ordered with us, you know what it is. You no subscriptions, stream it to your phone, tablet, big screen TV, any device, live interactive chat. Ask Jim anything. Ask Chris technical questions about what's going on in the ring. Ask me dumb questions about who's the swaggiest boxer in the game. Things like that. Order with us with PPV.com. They send us out here. They put up the freight. They are wonderful people. Let's have a good time. Jim, main event.
Trivia question.
Let's
before
go.
You move on.
Let's go. Hit me.
Who coached the Dream Team in 92?
That would be Chuck Daly.
You are good. All right. You nailed
yeah.
That.
Let's go.
All right.
Love Chuck. Love the Dream Team documentary. And I love all sports knowledge, all sports trivia. Not just boxing. I like to get into all sports.
Well, that wasn't so all-fired trivial, and I'm not surprised that you got it right away, but I think that his name always deserves to be mentioned because everybody knows the players. Everybody yeah. knows it was Magic and Michael and all those people.
And Tony Kukoc. Who's he on the USA team?
Larry Bird.
Who was the rookie on the Dream Team?
Christian Laettner.
Yes. He never played. They just gave him the business. Yeah.
He was the token college player.
What would you say is the Dream Team of USA boxers? If you can only pick five.
American fighters.
Yeah.
All time.
Yeah.
Sugar Ray Robinson, Joe Louis, Muhammad Ali. Let's see. Sugar Ray Leonard, Thomas Hearns.
No Floyd.
I like entertainment.
Love that. Let's
obviously, if you're talking about skill and trained instinct and winning fights, then yeah, Floyd belongs on the list, probably in place of Hearns, but
he calls himself the best ever. TBE.
He got away with it, too.
If you were to run into
a lot of people liked that, and a lot of people believed it.
It was great marketing. If you were to run into Floyd Mayweather in the casino here at the MGM, how would that interaction go down, you think?
Well, there were a lot of people through a long stretch of my career when I was at HBO. Floyd had left HBO, was on Showtime, and otherwise exposed. Leading up to the Pacquiao fight, I wound up calling the Pacquiao fight. I went to the fighter meetings for the Pacquiao fight, knowing that obviously I had no problem with Manny. Mm-hmm. Manny was one of my guys, but not knowing exactly what the response from Floyd was going to be. And when we went into the room for those fighter meetings prior to Mayweather Pacquiao, he could not have been nicer. He could not have been more gracious. He directed most of the answers to important questions directly to me while others were in the room. And I was both honored and impressed by his behavior in that regard. So I think if I saw him here today, it'd be fun.
Yeah, I think he's got, towards the end of his career, and especially now, he's been retired for close to a decade. He's got a little bit of a softer side. He's a grandfather now.
He's matured.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, we all do, and I agree. His edges softened. It happened even before the end of his career. And like I say, I was surprised on the weekend of Pacquiao Mayweather that he was as gracious to me as he was, because not too long before that, we had had the Victor Ortiz incident, which had ended with Larry interviewing him in the ring and him berating Larry.
I was 50 years younger, I'd kick your ass.
Larry says, if I was 50 years younger, I'd kick your ass.
Larry has told me and many other media members that eventually that's going to be on the second line of his obituary.
Well, no question is a big part of his identity. And my favorite piece of trivia from that entire interaction is that from the moment that Larry said that on camera in the In the Ring interview, turning to the camera with his eyes popped wide and saying, if I was 50 years younger, I'd kick your ass. From the moment that he did that until the moment you could buy a T-shirt on the Santa Monica Pier with a picture of Larry and a caption that says, if I was 50 years younger, I'd kick your ass. That was less than 9 hours. Okay? That was overnight.
America, baby.
Overnight.
Marketing.
Commerce rules.
You love that. We can do more of this type of content later on in this episode. I want to talk about the main event. This is like a throwback type of fight, Jim. This reminds me of like late 90s, early 2000s HBO when we had fighters under the age of 30 taking risks, you know, best versus best. This fight might have been an HBO After Dark, but now it is a PBC pay-per-view that you can buy on ppv.com. I love this fight. I'm so excited for this fight. I believe that they are so evenly matched. The odds illustrate as well. I think Benavidez right now, last time I checked, was a minus 190 favorite. Morel, a live dog at plus 155. There are all sorts of prop bets over on DraftKings. I'll be on the broadcast providing my insights for DraftKings on Saturday night. Doesn't this feel like a big fight? It feels like there's major stakes too. Winner potentially fighting Better Biv and Bivol. But overall, besides all that hoopla, just like an old school, evenly matched boxing match.
I think everybody's interested in the entertainment quality of the fight. I think everybody recognizes that there's a legitimate chance here for give and take mayhem. I'm not going to say Gatti Ward or Vasquez Marquez or Barrera Morales, but something of a light heavyweight replica of those kinds of things, relatively equal talents. Styles that could blend into something meaningful. The one specific element that makes it most exciting is that Morel is not a pure southpaw Cuban style technician, but rather a puncher. And so you have two punchers in the ring, one a right-handed puncher, the other a left-handed puncher. It's just an amazing matchup. And oh, by the way, just to spice it up a little bit, I don't think they like each other.
No, they do not. Like I said something to Benavidez in our little interview that we just did, a little session that's going to be on social media soon. It's like Chris Algieri said this, and I forgot it. Damn it, beef. Something about how, like, it doesn't matter. What is it? Beef. Say it.
Yeah, it's everyone speaks beef.
Thank you, Mitch. Everyone speaks beef. They might be speaking Spanish up there, some English, some Spanglish, but everyone can understand. Everyone can see the body language. These two hate each other, throwing belts at each other. We have Luis de Cuba Sr., who I've never actually heard speak. Didn't realize he had that type of fire in it. Didn't know he had that type of venom towards David Benavidez. So there's a lot going on in this fight. But I want to go back to one thing. Go ahead, Jim.
And both of them think they're getting the better of that. Both of them at this moment believe that they're winning the war upwards.
Right.
So that's great.
Benavidez thinks that he's got him nervous. Benavidez thinks that Morel is nervous because he's laughing in his face. Morel looks very, very loose forever. That's worth. I want to go back to something that you just said about Morel being a puncher. So I've gotten to call a bunch of fights with Most Valuable Promotions, and they have a trainer who is the trainer of David Morel by the name of Bob Santos. Outstanding trainer. A trainer to a lot of Cuban fighters. And getting to talk to Bob Santos and spending time with him, fighter meetings, hanging out by the pool and all that type of stuff that you do on a fight week, he will tell you that we are training these Cuban fighters to not be like Rigondeaux, to not really have that same type of style that you saw throughout boxing of a Cuban fighter that is the slick. Defense first. Don't take any risks. That's out the window now. They're no longer teaching that in the Cuban school of boxing. They're teaching sit down on your shots. Be selective, still be defensive-minded, but be more of a puncher. And I think David Morel illustrates that new-age Cuban-style boxer, and he's very dangerous.
Well, everybody noticed that Rigondeaux came here to the United States off of his amateur career with a reputation as the best fighter in the world. Mm. And he was going to come into this market and fight big fights and prove that he was the best fighter in the world. But because of the style, he never really got over with the audience. He never developed a following that would make it an economic imperative for other fighters to match up with him. So at the end of the day, that fizzled. And I doubt that that is in any way a secret to Morel and his boxing people. So it's important to sell entertainment in the American market. Benavidez is a fabulous example. He promises mayhem in every fight, and in most of them, he delivers. Even when he is forced to go the distance by a longer-armed, slightly larger Ukrainian background, light heavyweight, Oleksandr Vostik, he's still trying to commit mayhem, trying to land bigger punches, yep, and getting across and enough of them to win a unanimous decision. So at the end of the day, Benavidez understands what the market wants. Morrell is trying to respond to that by providing some of what the market wants. And most of all, what we all want to see is a great fight with pure offensive resolve on both fights.
I 100% agree.
Both sides.
Both sides. I think we're going to get that. Mexican versus Cuba. Big stakes. Winner could potentially face Beterbiev or Bivol, which we're getting on February 22nd. A little bit of a de facto tournament going down.
And by the way, Benavidez scored the fight between Beterbiev and Bivol for Bivol. He believes that Dmitry was the right winner.
Did you hear when we were talking in that room, he sparred Bivol as a teenager?
Yes.
Benavidez is like a when you say boxing lifer, it doesn't even like fully grasp what Benavidez
is. He was Golovkin's primary sparring
partner. I'm going back to when he was 3 years old. He said he started boxing at three.
It's amazing.
That's insane.
Really amazing.
And then he moved on, and you know, he was close to 300 pounds as a teenager.
Central casting.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
And now he's a stud.
Lost more than 80 pounds as a teenager to make himself into an athlete. And of course,
makes up to a millionaire.
You know this, Dan. Let's just theorize for a moment. And I've had this conversation with David Benavidez. Suppose he decides that he wants to go up to heavyweight. And as you mentioned, he weighed 240 some odd pounds when he was 13 years old. So I said to him, you've been to that weight level. You've had that body. It's only a matter of putting the weight back on in the best possible way. Given your level of punching power, given the economic difference between being a super middleweight or a light heavyweight and a heavyweight, have you given consideration to moving up to the heavyweight division?
Say?
He said, yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
He's got big ambitions.
I have dreamed that dream. And the bottom line on that dream is the very first, forgive me, Andy Ruiz, the first truly legitimate Mexican-American heavyweight championship contender. The Mexican-American who knocks on the door of being the heavyweight champion will be the biggest economic attraction in boxing and one of the biggest sports economic attractions anywhere on the planet. We're talking Messi money. We're talking Formula One money.
Wow.
If David Benavidez can get to that level.
You really think so?
I do. Wow. I believe that.
That's wild.
I believe that brings fans out of the woodwork who haven't paid attention there to boxing for years.
He's got the frame. You know, he's got the height.
He's got the language skills. He's got the public presentation part. Yeah. He's got the smile. He's got everything that goes with that.
But you know what? He's got to win this fight on Saturday.
Got to win this. It's an absolute must win.
Got to win this fight on Saturday.
If he loses that, all that, at least for the moment, goes out the window. But at the end of the day, it's a very hard fight to pick. And when I was required by job circumstances to produce a scouting report which picked a winner for PPV.com, and I sat down and isolated a list of factors and tried to pick which factor would decide the fight. The one that I ultimately settled on was incentive. Morrell doesn't have the same kind of incentive here that David Benavidez has. And they're human beings.
Mm-hmm.
They are driven by their internal motivations and how willing they are to extend themselves, to work, to take risks, et cetera, to get to the highest level. I believe that all those factors operate more in favor of Benavidez than in favor of Morrell.
Hard to disagree with that. Hard to argue that. Benavidez has been on that stage for a long time now.
And by the way, English is his primary language. And Morrell is learning some, but it's not his primary language.
Benavidez, world champ at age 21, been on that stage for a long time. The heavyweight questions, I can come after this, maybe on Monday. Also, Benavidez says, if I can't get Bivol or Beterbiev, I don't know why. Who knows in boxing why we don't get these fights. I will go up to cruiserweight and I will challenge Zerto Ramirez. So what's one more
another
weight
step
class up from
again,
cruiserweight?
Another step toward heavyweight, yes. And it'd be a great fight with Zerto Ramirez. He'd be coming off of one southpaw and going toward another. Both of them southpaws who can punch.
Yep.
That used to be an anomaly in the sport. Now we're seeing it more and more.
Let's get some questions from our listeners. There are a lot, and I'm very excited to interact with you guys. Matt Borgensen. Hey, what's up, guys? Big fan of the show. I'm a bit concerned about Benavidez having too much anger in this upcoming fight. Might be careless in exchanges. Yes, Matt, I don't know if you caught the beginning of our show. I said the same thing. I've been saying it all week long, and saying it all promotion long, that Benavidez is amped up for this fight, and it could bite him in the butt. He's a very emotional guy, but also he's a very poised fighter. This guy's, like I said, been boxing for a long time, 21. He was a world champion. I don't think he's going to go into the ring and be careless and start swinging. Will he use it to his benefit? We'll see. Will it end up being his downfall? We'll also see. That's why we watch, right?
Yeah, no, it's a bit, some of it is marketing, some of it is hype, some of it is to get us all interested, but again, I don't think they like each other, and that could show up in the fight.
Ringo Sturr says, Canobio looking good. Jim, too. Love
happy
that.
To hear that.
Love
happy
that.
To hear looking good.
This fight is going to sell more than Spence and Bud? I don't think so. I'd be shocked. I'd love that, because this is the type of fight that should sell, right, Jim?
Type of fight that absolutely should sell, but Spence and Bud Crawford together cumulatively had a larger public identity going into the fight.
We've got JD Spades is lurking, says, Jim, given Benavidez and Morell's contrasting styles, do you think this fight would play out as a technical chess match or evolve into a war of attrition?
Both fighters say that we should expect to see both during the fight. Both fighters say that we will see elements of a boxing match and that there may be some rounds which are more reflective of a boxing match. And we will also see elements of a war and there be some rounds that reflect that.
Damn.
So a hybrid is the answer to the question.
I mean, if we get all that, I mean, we got ourselves fight of the year. We got ourselves a
very,
rematch.
Very high possibility, I think, of fight of the year. Whether it's voted that way or not, I think it has the chance to be that high quality of confrontation. In a different weight class, we could be talking about Barrera versus Morales. Talking about Vasquez Marquez. We could be talking about Gaddy Ward, although they were not at the level of skill that these guys are.
I tweeted that out, and I got ripped for that. I said, this could be fight of the year. And somebody, how can it be fight of the year when 3 weeks later, the real light heavyweight fight is taking place, which is Beterbiev and Bivol? I said, I think this could be fight of the year. Beterbiev Bivol, the first fight wasn't
seen. Beterbiev,
but it wasn't like a
fight.
Banger.
Now, Bivol doesn't fight that kind of fight. Bivol is a technical boxer more than anything else. He's a strong, powerful technical boxer, but he's not a guy who goes to war for the sake of going to war.
This is a question for you, Jim, to both Jim and Dan. Out of all the fighters throughout boxing history, which one feels like the one that never got his shine that he deserved? He says Jimmy Young.
Well, I'm not sure. All of boxing history, I would rely more on Dan Canobio for all of boxing history.
No, you, Jim.
And I would rely on me.
You saw more boxing than
who never got enough attention or enough glory for what he did. I don't know. Willie Peck?
Harry Greb?
You know, somebody who was a defensive fighter. Luis Rodriguez, who was out of Cuba and was a great southpaw stylist at that time, didn't have a big audience before because of his Cuban nationality and didn't speak a lot of English, but he was one whale of a fighter. There are others, but I'm not exactly sure who didn't get enough shine.
Jim, what do you think has been the biggest change in boxing since you started covering the sport?
Biggest change in boxing is since I started covering the sport, and I began covering the sport in 1987, the biggest change is conditioning. The overall sophistication of conditioning, the level of conditioning to which fighters now attempt to rise. Nobody goes in, works out 2.5 hours in the gym every day for 5 or 6 weeks, and then comes in thinking they're ready to fight.
Right.
Everybody has ancillary physical conditioning. Everybody's doing running, bicycle work, all sorts of other things all year round. You have to stay in shape 24/365. If you want to compete in boxing these days,
let's switch it up for a second. Let's take a look at the undercard. It's a really good card. The co-main event is getting slept on because a lot of attention is going towards Benavidez and Morell, rightfully so. We just talked about how big the stakes are. Stephen Fulton and Brandon Figueroa are fighting once again. They fought in 2021, which was arguably the fight of the year. They were going at it. They threw almost 1,700 combined punches in that fight. I like Brandon Figueroa. I think he has a little bit more left in the tank. I think that Stephen Fulton reached the pinnacle against Inoue. Really debilitating loss for Fulton. I give him a lot of credit for getting back to this stage right here. I just think Figueroa has a little bit more in the tank. I like Figueroa in the co-main.
It's also a fight of the year candidate.
Yes.
It could produce a, you know, one of those 2,000 punch copy box numbers, et cetera, et cetera.
All the boys at copy box are ready.
It's very, very exciting to see it happening again. And just for the sake of argument, because you picked Brandon Figueroa, I will pick Stephen Fulton to repeat his victory over him.
Very close odds in that one, too. I think Fulton is the underdog, which is wild. You don't really see that too often where the underdog.
Yeah, I like to pick underdogs. Stephen Fulton over Brandon Figueroa.
Nice. Pitbull Cruz, who is a very up-and-down fighter. He will look like a world beater in one fight. Next fight, he cannot figure out Jose Venezuela's jab, and he loses the fight. He was rumored to be fighting Ryan Garcia. He turned down the fight because he said it's bad luck to focus on a fight when I already have one planned. He's fighting Angel Pierro, who is a come-forward type of fighter. Another banger of a fight. Two come-forward fighters. Pitbull Cruz is at his best when his opponent is coming at him, and that's what Pierro is going to do. Boom.
Pitbull's coming. Pitbull's coming off of an upset loss, right?
Yep.
And it's inherent, and the onus is on his matchmakers that they have to find an opponent against whom he can both entertain and win. Fierro is an ideal candidate for that. I believe Pitbull gets the victory that keeps his career going.
I agree.
On a star arc.
I like Pitbull in this one. He's got a lot to fight for. He can. There's a lot of names at 140.
But it should be wildly entertaining.
Yeah, and then
it's another possible fight of the year.
Kicking off the show, Jesus Ramos Jr., who is a 23-year-old sensation at 154 pounds. He's a big, big boy at age 23. I don't know how he makes 154. He's a wrecking ball. Fighting former 154 champion Jason Banana Rosario, who I learned had one hell of the last 2 years coming back from crippling depression, homeless at one point. It's crazy to think about because he was a world champ at one point. That just shows you the ups and downs of the sport, ups and downs of life in general, Jim. Hard not to pull for Jason Rosario, but I think he's going to be outgunned here. Ramos is just too young, too fresh, too fast, too powerful.
More than any other sport, because of its entrepreneurial nature, because of the level to which decision-making and the things that make you great come from inside you and not necessarily from all of the people around you, etc. Boxing is the sport that is more a graphic portrayal of real life than any other. This is not artificial. This is life and death. And I think that's what boxing fans love about boxing. Every minute is meaningful. Every second is meaningful. These fighters' lives are taking place right in front of us.
Yeah.
And it's easy to fall in love with the guys who give us what we want to see.
Absolutely. They're the wildest people. I love interviewing the fighters because they have so much personality.
And soul.
And they have to promote. Like in the NBA, you don't have to have a basketball player promote anything. They don't have to promote themselves. They're not selling anything. They're part of a league. They're part of a team. Boxing, you got to promote yourself. The fighters that promote themselves, to say Ryan Garcia, that guy sells because he's willing to do interviews. He's willing to say crazy stuff. It's great for someone like me who does interviews and talks to these fighters on a somewhat daily basis. So we love that. So it's a really good card. What do we got over here? We got David Morrell is still here, which is crazy. Oh, David Benavidez is also still here. It is 3:28.
David Benavidez likes attention.
Yes, he does.
That's a good thing for a fighter. That's not a bad thing for
He's locked in.
The guys who hide from this, who are reclusive, they're not likely to achieve in the ring at the level of the guys who are extroverts and want to entertain. Case in point, Muhammad Ali. Case in point, Sugar Ray Robinson. Case in point, Sugar Ray Leonard.
Mm.
It's a sport for exhibitionists.
Yeah, this guy says here, George Foreman grill. Made George Foreman more money than his actual fights. Marketing. Who is the most sellable fighter in modern boxing not named Canelo? I mean, it's hard, crazy. It's hard not to say, like, well, the heavyweights, Tyson Fury, Joshua. List. I
definitely.
You might not like
him. Over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, it is possible that that becomes David Benavidez.
Yeah, I always thought that,
he
too.
Has to win Saturday night.
Well, I mean, David, the thing about Benavidez is he's not – he's on this trajectory. He used that word, I believe, yesterday with you, trajectory. I like the way my career is progressing. I like the trajectory my career is on. You cannot deny that. I mean, the guy was champion of 21, is taking big fights as he goes. This Morel fight is like a fight that he does not need that to take. He could have sat back and fought anyone at 175 and maybe waited for Benavidez – waited for Beterbiev, waited for Bivol. But he is now fighting a really tricky fighter in Morel. Hats off to David Benavidez. He wins this fight. I mean, if you're a hater of David Benavidez, you got to tip your cap to him. Let's get some more questions before we say goodbye. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. I'm going to try to get Chris Algieri.
Who's your guest tomorrow? Oh, Chris Algieri?
Get Chris back. Get Chris back in the mix. Maybe, Jim, if you want to sit down with us, you can, you're more than welcome. Going back to the George Foreman grill, I have a funny story about this, Jim. You'll appreciate it. Obviously, my father created CompuBox. You guys, we all worked together throughout our careers and all that. There he is.
See you later.
There's Benavidez walking out.
Loves, David, thank you again.
Loves my tracksuit.
Gracious.
He's called
gracious.
Me a fly guy.
Good guy.
Wish we got that on camera. The Foreman grill.
What about it?
George is working HBO with you. He's working with my dad. He gave a bunch of them out to everyone at HBO. My dad comes home with this giant box. And it looks like, I don't know what this thing looks like. It looks like some type of machine. It looks like some type of alien. It looks like some type of, I don't know what mechanism. I said, Dad, what is this? He goes, this is the George Foreman grilling machine. And George, it's something that George is now doing. He's selling these. And
this
I said,
is what it looked like to George. Right? That's what George
hundreds,
saw
baby.
In the Foreman grill. And he was 100% correct, because at the end of the day, the story was the quality and utility of the product. If you had one, you would buy another one as soon as that one wore out. You could not cook without it after a certain period of time.
Everyone in college
it was one
had
of the most effective, useful, meaningful cooking implements ever developed by mankind. And I have often said this, and said this a lot of people. George Foreman is a full-on genius, okay? He is one of the smartest and most thoughtful people I've ever met in my life. If I had a deep personal problem, and this happened a couple times, I wanted to get advice from somebody who I really trusted to understand life, I would ask George.
Yeah.
You know, marital problem, business problem, et cetera, et cetera. George was the right guy to talk to. And I've had conversations with people where I put this out there and they say, what's your evidence that Foreman is such a smart guy? He seems to me like a laughing oaf in those advertisements. And my answer was always, you don't think he's a genius? Look at the wallet.
Yeah.
Okay.
The wad.
Look at the bank account. He was not being advised by some guru which products to endorse. He chose them.
Right.
He chose Meineke mufflers. He chose the Foreman grill.
Yeah,
all of that, the big man clothing. He knew which products blended with his personality, the smile, the hamburgers. Great way to start, etc. George Foreman is a full-on genius. And, oh, by the way, a wonderful, thoughtful, loving, dependable friend.
Did you know? Beautiful. I agree.
It was
a great guy to know as we're growing up. Did you know that Hulk Hogan was in the mix to do the grill? And he turned
it
down.
I did not know that.
He turned it down. And George said, I'll do it. Stacks.
As I'm saying.
Stacks.
Genius.
Everyone in college had that thing.
Yeah.
Throw a couple pieces of chicken on it, throw a hamburger in your college dorm or your college apartment. Boom.
You couldn't beat it. Yeah.
Genius.
Women all over the country who knew nothing about George Foreman understood how important it was to have the grill.
That's right. Got to have that grill. Christian says genius enough to know more would be sitting duck right in front of him.
Well,
it happened. Jim's book.
That's my book. Yeah, that's the title of the book. I think the person who sent that in has probably heard this, but I've said it several times that in the weeks leading up to the fight, George and I were working together on HBO calling fights, and I would pull him aside at the fighter meeting, pull him aside at production meetings, et cetera, and say, George, probably happened 4 or 5 times. George, how are you going to beat Moore? I mean, he's a southpaw. He's a mover. He is much faster than you are. Holyfield couldn't find him, and Holyfield has better feet than yours. What is your plan for beating Michael Moore? Mm. And Foreman, the genius, over and over said the same thing to me. You watch. Late in the fight, somewhere in the last couple of rounds, he will come and stand in front of me and let me knock him out. Always those same words. He will come and stand in front of me and let me knock him out. Go to YouTube. Look at the conclusion of Foreman Moore. Listen to those words. It is stunning. It is cosmic. How he did that, I still don't know. But at the end of the day, there's no question in my mind that George had a managed plan, had a vision of how he was going to get Michael Moore to come into his punching arc in a vulnerable stance at the moment in the fight when it most mattered. And that's exactly what happened.
It happened. One of the greatest calls in boxing history by our guy, Jim Lampley, who now we are colleagues. It's crazy how life works. PPV.com is the place to order Benavidez and Morrell Saturday night. Also get Jim's book. It happened.
This you order at Amazon.
There you go.
Or Barnes & Noble or any other book-selling entity.
Love that. Great book. I'll definitely be buying one. I also would like a free
one. All about my lucky accidental, might not have happened, sports television career.
Awesome. So cool. Such a great time to be spending with you here in Las Vegas. We're wrapping up. We're going to go get some dinner. We're going to go hang out. We're going to go crank out a lot of content. My guy Mitch behind the scenes doing God's work. I see him editing a video right now of me and Benavidez, where I had Benavidez interview me. Did you catch that, Jim? He interviewed me, Benavidez.
Really?
Because he said...
I think he wants to be broadcast.
That's what he said.
I mean, there's no question he wants to be broadcast. He wants to, you know, he and I have discussed the moment when we'll go sit down together for dinner and talk about all the old fights that I called, et cetera, and he can, you know, begin to get himself ready to call fights in the future.
That'd be cool. I know he's not thinking about that right now. He's thinking about David Morrell. He's probably dreaming about David Morrell. We are getting closer and closer to Saturday night. Order Benavidez Morrell on PPV.com. Join me, Jim, Chris Algieri, Lance Pugmire in the live interactive chat. There's no subscriptions. None. Not a single subscription needed for this. You can stream it on your phone. You can watch this fight on your tablet. If you want to, you can watch it on your big screen TV. I'd rather watch it on my big screen TV. You can do that with PPV.
And you will get observations throughout the fight from Dan Canobio on PPV.com. And you can join in the chat and talk back to Dan or to Chris Algieri or to Lance Pugmire or even me if you want to.
I think you did the order wrong. They're going to talk to you first. you're they're the main attraction. You're the main event.
I would never say that.
I'm not.
You know, I never boxed.
Me neither.
Chris Algieri did.
Chris Algieri has boxed. He'll let you know. He fought Manny Pacquiao.
He
beat Ruslan Provodnikov.
I called his win over Provodnikov.
I was there, too.
It was stunning.
It was stunning. I was there. June 14th, 2014.
Performance.
I missed my guy, Algieri. He'll be back. Final prediction, Jim. And keep in mind, David Morrell's right next to us.
I picked Benavidez in the scouting report. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it was very difficult to choose. You know, if the fight were taking place in Havana, no question Morrell would be the favorite. If the fight were based on the subject of a southpaw Cuban technician with power against a guy who could be seen as wild and unformed and all power, Morrell would be the favorite. But at the end of the day, fighters are human beings. Their internal motivation is huge in determining what they ultimately will do in the ring. Benavidez has more to win here than Morrell does, and I think he wins the fight.
Okay. Love that. That's Jim Lampley's official prediction.
That's a Jim Lampley kind of a thought.
That's a Jim Lampley kind of a thought. It's a Jim Lampley kind of show. I'll give my prediction tomorrow alongside Chris Algieri. Enjoy your night. Enjoy your day. Enjoy everything. We're living in...
Enjoy life.
Enjoy life. We're living in weird times, but enjoy your life. We're out. We're going to say goodbye now. We're going to... What are we going to do now, Jim? What does Jim Lampley do for the rest of the Vegas day?
Go back to the room and read the scouting report for about the 15th time. You know, just go through all of the notes that I put together about their backgrounds, et cetera. You're always looking for the one little detail that you might have overlooked before that suddenly affects your opinion about what happens in the fight, but a lot of it is just continuing to reinforce the things that you already think you know and want to have at your disposal when you go on the air, or in this case, online to chat with the viewers.
Or then we go to the club, right?
Then we go to the club.
That's right. All right, everybody. We'll
I'm having dinner after the fight with a new best friend who is a very celebrated screenwriter. I won't use his name, but it's a fun friendship that has emerged as the result of boxing.
The people you meet in this sport. People you meet in this sport are wild.
Oh, yeah. No, this is the best people's sport.
It's the best molding of friendships.
This is when, you know this. You've probably even seen it. You go to an event where there are athletes from every single sport in the room. And could be, Michael Jordan and Larry Bird. Could be Joe Montana and Tom Brady, et cetera, et cetera. Among the athletes, who's the royalty?
Boxers. That's right.
Because all the other athletes know that they play games, and boxers don't play games.
We end
fighters
with that.
Fight.
We end with that. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll see you next time on Inside Boxing Live. Thank you, Jim Lampley, for joining us. Order on PPV.com. Follow us everywhere. Have a great time. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.